HRT not working? Why rhythmic dosing might be better. I'm Dr. Valerie from Progress Your Health.
And I'm Dr. Mackey from Progress Your Health. So thanks for visiting our channel. If you're new here, we'd like to talk about or answer questions about perimenopause, menopause, HRT. If you've been here before, then you know sort of what our format is all about. In the comments down below, if you have any questions, you want to ask us a question, feel free to put your question down below. Or if you don't feel comfortable putting it out in the public space like that, you can visit our website, progressyourhealth.com. Up at the top of the website, there is a link there for the Ask the Doctor tab. Enter your name and email and put your question in, and we will end up answering your question on the show. So this one is from Danielle, another one from Ask the Doctor. So why don't you go ahead and read her question and we'll dive right in.
All right. So this is from Danielle. We do change everybody's names. So hello, I'm 59 years old and started estradiol and progesterone in December. My last period was late May of 2020 at 54. Last summer, I started noticing more brain memory issues and found out from other women that it was likely due to menopause. I've had some hot flashes and night sweats, not extreme, joint pain, chronic cough, which has been checked, lungs are fine, some sleep issues, moodiness, vaginal dryness. Right now, I'm on a static dose of 100 milligrams of progesterone, and after 3 months of being on the 0.025 estradiol patch, recently the patch was upped to 0.375. I've noticed some improvements. I know my doctor wants to keep my dose low, but I want to be proactive with my bones, brain, and heart health, so would like to have a higher dose of estradiol. I haven't had any blood work done. I live in BC, Canada. I would like to discuss cyclical dosing with my doctor and would like to bring some information in. He is a general practitioner who is open to HRT, which I'm so grateful for. He also reads lots of research papers and has gone to some kind of HRT training recently. If you can recommend some research articles I could bring in, that would also be really helpful. Thanks.
Well, there's a little bit to unpack there. Congratulations to her general practitioner for going to some training and at least being open to HRT. I know that you and I have been doing this a long time, and it hasn't always. Other doctors haven't always been as open as they are in 2025.
No, that is true. We've been in practice for over 20 years, so it's changed. The climate has changed. Mm-hmm. And I will say there's a lot of advocacy for women, which is awesome. And we're advocating for ourselves and for our hormonal health. So now we're kind of seeing those tides change a little bit where doctors are more open to prescribing. But the unfortunate thing is, because they haven't had the training, they're not really sure how to prescribe or what to prescribe. So right. That's where where we come in.
Yeah, well, honestly, that's why we started. That's why we focus on women's health, because there's a big gap at least in the United States marketplace or the healthcare landscape. Certainly, it sounds like there probably is in Canada as well. But we also know how difficult it is for women to be able to find the right answers for themselves. You can scour the internet, looking for your HRT or your menopausal concerns, and sometimes either your doctor might not know the answer or you're not going to be able to find it. So that's where this podcast sort of started a number of years ago anyways. So why don't we unpack? She's got a lot of things there, some very common symptoms, some common dosing. She is asking about cyclic or rhythmic dosing, which we're certainly advocates for. So why don't we break her down?
Well, I would say first to start off with is, HRT, there's so many different ways to dose hormone replacement therapy. I mean, there's creams, there's capsules, there's troches, there's rhythmic dosing, cyclical dose. There's so many, static dosing, which she was talking about here. So I would say we've been getting a lot more questions about the rhythmic dosing.
Sure.
Like, I will say that that's not very mainstream talked about,
no.
Like the estradiol
patch.
Not at all. Static dosing. But we've gotten a lot of questions. So I think we should talk about the rhythmic dosing and what that is and what that means.
Sure. Yeah. So she's coming from a very typical place, going from the patch and some oral progesterone to something what we would consider to be completely different. Mm-hmm. She says her doctor wants to keep the dose low, right? So how do you compare a dose, her most recent 0.0375 to rhythmic dosing? Is that dose is really as low as it appears when it's, 0.0375?
Well, I always have said the estradiol patch and hormone transdermal creams are like apples and oranges to each other. Don't ever compare that dose to like a biased cream that you're going to, you know, rub on your inner thigh. Like those are apples and oranges. I always do find that sometimes those estradiol patches, even though they seem like the milligrams are low, that in some people, you know, it seems a little strong. Like I have found that it can be a little strong. And if you have a uterus, it can cause some out of sync bleeding, which then you got to either do an ablation or an IUD or raise up your progesterone. So I do feel like sometimes static dosing, you're kind of doing this balance between, okay, we have to make sure we keep that uterus safe and it's not getting thick or the breast tissue, but we want to raise up our estrogen. But what does estrogen like to do? It has, there's a lot of receptors for estradiol in our breast tissue and our uterine tissue. So if you raise up the estradiol, those tissues could be stimulated. So you want to raise up the progesterone to offset that, because progesterone can offset some of the negative side effects of estradiol. But you're trying to do this sort of interplay to do that, where I find even though the rhythmic dosing, which we'll get into, seems like those estradiol doses, even in the bloodstream when you test it, are a little on the high end, you're cycling it. So there's a lot more safety protocol, I find, to that, because you're not just letting that uterus build up and just this lining hang around in there, which is not safe.
Yeah, right. Now, like you said, mainstream, this the rhythmic dosing approach or protocol doesn't really get talked about at all. And I think there, you know, there'd even still be some kind of pushback, because you're intentionally trying to create that menstrual cycle on a monthly basis. The fact that a woman is building up that lining and it's, you know, she's shedding it off every 28 days is the part that actually makes it safe for them to do. Like you said, with rhythmic dosing like this, the patch, I'm not really sure even how it does it, but it really pushes those blood levels up there pretty good.
Yeah. So I would say one thing is, she says she's never had her blood work done, so that would be important. But just to kind of back up a little bit, so rhythmic dosing is where you're doing estradiol and progesterone, and you're basically mimicking the ovarian cycle or that of a healthy female menstrual cycle. So if you have a uterus, you get a period, and then you're changing up that estrogen, raising up that estrogen in that follicular phase. Estrogen peaks out on day 12, and then you add in that progesterone on day 14, and then that peaks out on day 21, comes back down, you hit day 28, you're supposed to get a period if you have a uterus. So you're changing it. It's completely different than static dosing. It's still considered under the umbrella of HRT, but it's static dosing and rhythmic dosing are like apples and oranges. And then again, like I said, the estradiol patch and transdermal biased cream is like apples and oranges. So like I was saying earlier, there's really lots of different ways to do HRT. It just depends on the person.
Yeah, yeah. Now, she says she's concerned about her bones, her brain, her heart health, all those things, which is why we're sort of advocates for the rhythmic dosing, because you are enhancing or raising those hormone levels. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, that's sort of what it's all about. But the hormone levels you get with rhythmic dosing, you really can't and should not achieve those levels from static dosing. So that's why you have to sort of decide as the patient and the practitioner which option is the right, you know, the right choice for them. And you go from, you know, literally, you know, there's like a line you draw in the sand, and you have your static and you have your rhythmic. They're completely different, you know, as far as how they're going to affect a woman's body.
And that's where I do feel like whether you're doing the static or you're doing the rhythmic, especially if you're doing the rhythmic, is you really do want to test the blood. So here she is, you know, maybe raising up the hormone levels of that estradiol, you know, that estradiol patch. She's on 100 milligrams of progesterone. I do feel like it would be important to test her blood work. Now, there's lots of different ways to test hormones. You know, there's saliva, there's dried blood, there's urine, there's, you know, but I do feel like in terms of maybe financial or maybe accessibility, that blood testing is probably more accessible to women, especially if they're working with their general practitioner that might not even know about saliva testing or any of that, that I would say probably for sure doing a blood test on what she's on and then consider about maybe switching to the rhythmic dosing. But I would say it's one of those things that, you know, if a general practitioner is just learning about static dosing, that's a whole lot of information right there. Yeah. To have them go and do rhythmic dosing with you, I feel like that would be, you know, not the easiest co-collaboration, between practitioner and patient. It's like trying to, I don't know the analogy, having somebody work on my car that's really maybe an executive chef or something.
Yeah, well, I think that the patch and oral progesterone is, you know, sort of like your introductory to hormones, right? That's fairly easy to find. Doctors can prescribe it easy enough. You get it at your big box pharmacy. Rhythmic dosing is sort of like, you know, an advanced level training, both on the practitioner side and what the woman's going to experience. The fact that you're raising those hormone levels high enough for a woman to actually intentionally get a period, there's a lot of potential for problems in that situation if you don't know how to modify. So you can't, you know, with the patch and the progesterone, you can sort of set it and forget it, right? You know, those are just sort of easy. Slap on a patch, take a capsule every night, and you're good, relatively, sort of. I mean, like I said, her blood level should probably be checked. Rhythmic dosing is quite a bit different than that. Now, we don't find it to be dangerous. We don't find it to be, we find it to be sort of the opposite of dangerous. We find it to be the best way to do hormones because you are making some very intentional decisions, both in the short term, how she feels, but also what she's looking for is that long-term protection of her bones, brain, and heart. You know, and that comes down to really, that comes down to the, you know, to the blood level that you were alluding to. How high is her estradiol level, you know, over the course of that protocol?
Yeah. So I would say right now for Danielle is checking that blood, checking that progesterone. Usually that you take your progesterone at night. I assume she's probably on a progesterone capsule. You really want to have that progesterone. You don't want it to be too low the next day. Of course, you don't want it to be too high because you're taking it at night, but usually right around like a 3 is a good level. When you get up a little higher, like up closer to 10, that's a little, you know, you want to maybe change that progesterone to instant release. See, there's instant release, there's sustained release. There's so many different ways to even do progesterone. But I would definitely check her blood and then check that estradiol level because she's thinking it's low. He says he wants to keep it low. Let's say we did her estradiol level on the patch and her level was 160 estradiol. You know, that would be too high, you know, on a static dose. You don't want to have that level continuously. Now, on rhythmic dosing, you know, you want to have somebody at an estradiol of 160 on a particular time of their cycle, but the other times of the cycle, mm-hmm. it might be different. So that's probably the key here between that balance is, you know, ideally, you know, I don't know, you know, research articles, great, learning, going to courses and classes, that's probably essential, is going to the training.
Yeah, mm-hmm. for sure. You know, rhythmic dosing is sort of separate, you know, that is a little bit obscure, you know, as far as that type of training. And we've had other people ask about that in the past as well. Don't really feel too comfortable talking too much about the dosing on YouTube just because that, like I said, that you can't just, you know, start it, modify it, and do it your own way because, you know, potentially things can go wrong if you don't do the protocol right. And when it comes to hormones in general, of course, you know, safety first, both in the short term, you know, and the long term. So that part, and as far as honestly research, when it comes to rhythmic dosing, because it's not a patented prescription, there really is no research, right? There's no double blind, placebo controlled, you know, group of women that have gone through rhythmic dosing because there's really no profit motivation from something like that. So that research that she's asking for to give to her practitioner, that research really doesn't exist.
Mm-hmm. No, who's going to fund it?
Yeah. Which is unfortunate because, you know, in this, you know, even in our practice, it would be really nice to, you know, not that we're going to become research scientists necessarily, but you know, it would be nice if someone actually did do. Now, granted, every practice like ours really is its own sort of research, sort of study, because you know, pretty much our entire practice, women are on some type of hormone replacement, and we get a lot of good results with people.
Oh no, absolutely. I will say, in terms for Danielle, and I speak for myself too, because I'm doing the rhythmic dosing. Yep. Is if you're thinking of brain fog, the rhythmic dosing is really good for the brain fog. That I would say is probably the biggest, one of the kind of the best things about that rhythmic dosing is when you're cycling that estrogen and progesterone, it really helps with the receptor, like even the neurotransmitters in your brain, the serotonin, the dopamine, the GABA, but it does really help with that clarity and that focus and that short-term memory. So if that's one big issue that Danielle's having, then I can understand her, you know, wanting to possibly gravitate toward the rhythmic dosing.
Sure, yeah. And I know that was, you know, you never really had any hot flashes or night sweats or, you know, at least too much of that. You know, yours was really more on the brain side, like, you know, menopausal brain. Mm-hmm. Yeah, menopausal brain is like mm-hmm. a real thing for sure.
Yeah, so I would say, I mean, static dosing can, don't get me wrong, we've been doing static dosing for over 20 years, and ecstatic dosing in a menopausal woman can change their life. It can be tremendous. Yeah. But it's like I said, there's so many different caveats and things that you can sort of, you know, go for goals. Like some patients we have, you know, they just want to work on their libido, you know? So, okay, let's work on those hormones there. And then I have other women who have a history of osteoporosis in their family and they're terrified of having, you know, their bone density going down. So we work on the hormones from that aspect. So the neat thing is there's so much advocacy for hormones and women's health and how important hormones are for women, but there's so many nuances and caveats to it, you know?
Yeah. It's one of those things where, I see some people online talking about menopause and how women have, at least women in menopause have been, and certainly perimenopause as well. Maybe in some ways, all women's health, mm-hmm. women have sort of been marginalized a little bit. Like there's just not as much, if men went through some of the same issues that women have to deal with over the course of their, you know, of their lives, mm-hmm. there'd be thousands of treatments everywhere. But it seems like, you know, you're given a patch and, you know, and some progesterone and that's just supposed to work for you, you know, and just like, you know, just like Danielle, she's looking for something a little bit more. So there's a way to get your foot in the door with hormone replacement. But, you know, if you're looking for a, you know, kind of a different level of impact or benefit, you know, then it comes down to, like I said, it comes down to the dosing itself. You know, the amount of it that you take, that's why, you know, rhythmic dosing is quite a bit different than some of the other static dosing options.
No, I absolutely agree. In fact, we just did my blood work because I'm doing the rhythmic dosing. I did my blood work on day 12, which was just the other day. And because day 12 is supposed to be the highest estrogen peak. So I want to check that because I don't want, when you're doing rhythmic dosing, you don't want them to be too low because then that's not beneficial either. I want to make sure that you're getting that period every month if you have a uterus. My estradiol level was a little bit on the low end comparatively. Now, granted, you know, my doses are probably lower. I always like to start low with any patient and work our way up rather than doing too much. But see, that's where we've talked about too. I love the blood testing. We want to get the data, mm-hmm. but then you don't want to chase the numbers.
Yeah, right. You always, our rule has always been where you treat the patient first, and the labs are just sort of there to, you know, kind of
a tool.
They're there to guide and help your decision making. But you know, the patient comes first. With rhythmic dosing, the first and foremost is right out of the gate is to establish the period. Because mm-hmm. as long as a woman is bleeding every month, then, you know, depending on what her blood level is of the estradiol, that's the part that makes it safe, because that lining is building up and then sloughing off and then building up and then sloughing up. And like you said, you're testing on day 12. That's a very, you know, the protocol is sort of designed about peaking on that estradiol level on that day, where with static dosing, you're going to have these sort of like flatline numbers mm-hmm. over the course of the month. But with the patch, you're going to have a little bit of a rise and it's going to fall, a little bit of a rise yes. and it's going to fall. But it's not going to be as much as it is on rhythmic dosing, which, could potentially cause some problems.
The patch is not rhythmic dosing. You're just saying you put it on twice a week, that when you first put it on, you can have a little bit of a surge of the estradiol. And then when you're ready for your next patch, it might be starting to go down, and then you put the next one. Yeah. So it's not at all like a rhythmic dosing. I think it's just the mechanism behind, you know, how it's, you know, given to the body.
The patch is where... The patch itself is a delivery mechanism, is where the patent lies. You can't patent estradiol, but the patch itself is the part that's patented. And I don't even know how the patch works. I mean, the dosage levels, 0.025, 0.0375, but their blood levels.
How much is going in?
Yeah. I mean, their blood levels will literally go from less than 30, which is a very classic menopausal number, to, like you said, well over 100 in a lot of cases, right when they put it on.
Yeah, it depends. Yeah, it really depends on the person, how they're absorbing it as well. So that's why I do feel like the blood work, don't want to chase the numbers, I know, but I do feel like it's a really good tool to give you some assessment. And then you get some data, and let's say you did change your dose, and then you retested her on it. If the level went up, okay. If it didn't, if it went down, you know, you can kind of follow how the dosing is. Or if it's too high, you got to back down a little bit too. And then, of course, like you said, you know, the symptoms as well. Because she's got a lot, like she said, the joint pain, that's really common in menopause just because of the lubrication. I just had a patient the other day that told me She's been seeing eye doctors, eye specialists for the last 2 years because of her, you know, the eyes were dry and she couldn't even watch TV because it was just kind of gritty and or read a book. That now that we're doing the rhythmic dosing as opposed to she had been on some static here and there and then nothing, and now we're doing the rhythmic dosing, that her dry eye has gotten considerably better. So you think of all mucous membranes, the vaginal dryness, yep, she's having, the eyes, mm-hmm, the joints, anything that's got that lubrication.
Yeah, yeah. And some of those things, and this is sort of why we're sort of advocates for the rhythmic dosing, is because some of those things or those benefits that women experience on the rhythmic dosing are not really achievable with the static dosing.
Yeah, right? Because you're fine line, like you said. Yeah,
And really it comes down to the dosing amount. I mean, honestly, the dosing for, you know, when you're day 12 on your rhythmic dosing, and your dosing is actually kind of on the lower end, yeah, compared to where it could be, that's even still quite a bit higher than all the static dosing options out there. So it's very strange when you see doses like this versus what rhythmic dosing levels are. You know, they're quite higher than what you'd expect on the static dosing front.
But, you know, just to throw it out there, I feel good. My brain feels good. I don't have any hot flashes, although I think I had a hot flash the other day. I was with a client or a patient and I sipped the water, you know, when you just sip it wrong and you start coughing, and then I got embarrassed. And then I think I gave myself a hot flash. I was so embarrassed. I just couldn't.
while you were talking to
a patient. Yeah, while I was talking, because I drank some water in front of her and it went down the wrong tube and then I started coughing and then I got embarrassed and then I got all red and I think I had a hot flash, but I don't have. But on the rhythmic dosing, maybe that was more like a blushing or flush because I was embarrassed.
Yeah, maybe just, you know, because you're on a video call.
Yeah, I was doing a telecall with her. She was so sweet.
And you start choking. That's probably not the right time for it.
But no, I do. I feel good. I think, you know, I've been sleeping good.
Honestly, we talked about, mm-hmm, this on one of the last episodes. I think your sleep has been better than it has been in a very long time.
Yeah, even when I was in perimenopause, I didn't sleep great, even though I was taking the progesterone. But I will say, because I feel good, do I really want to up those doses? You know, I feel good. I do feel like I'm getting a period. It's not horrendous. It's just for a couple of days, you know, 3 days short, not super heavy, not crampy, which is the way the periods are supposed to be, you know, especially given my history, you know, my personal history in the past, that it's pretty good. I think I might actually ride this out a little bit and then just retest it again and see where the levels are at. Because, you know, blood is just looking at one snapshot in your 1 minute of 1 second of your day of your life. You know, that, you know, I think I might just redo it, you know, before just jumping into higher doses.
Yeah. We've been doing it that way for quite a while. The numbers actually, I wouldn't say they mean more, but they actually sort of do mean more. Like I said, you're looking at it a very specific date and time of the entire cycle, because that's how a woman's hormones, when she's menstruating, for, you know, on her own, they sort of need to be looked at it that way. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't just take a random blood test on any day of a woman's cycle because the numbers are changing all the time. But with rhythmic dosing, the timing of when you do it actually does matter, because you're trying to shoot for, no, like I said, treat the patient first, not the lab. We're not chasing the numbers, but there are some very specific targets that we're looking for. That's where the numbers actually get, you know, I wouldn't say they get to be fun, but the data, along with how a woman feels, and those start to match up. She's feeling good, like you are. Your numbers look really good. That's, you know, that's the best place to be.
I feel good. I will say, like you were saying, if you're on rhythmic dosing, it is, you don't have to be perfect about it, but it is good to get it depending on where, get your blood drawn depending on where you are in your cycle. But if you're on static dosing, because every day is the same, it really doesn't matter.
Yeah. Now, she was on the patch before, you know, you could test it, you know, right when she puts the patch on, it's going to be a lot higher of a number. You could test it right when she's getting ready to put on her next one, it's going to be a lot lower. So you are getting a little rise and fall there, mm-hmm, which those numbers should probably be paid attention to see how high that number is actually going. And to see sort of the up and down, because, you know, static dosing is really going to just be like this, same dose every day. There really shouldn't be too much of a rise and fall. But with the patch, just because, you know, of how that patch actually works, there is going to be a little bit of rise and fall, but the kind of rise and fall that you don't really want, mm-hmm, necessarily.
Yeah, no, it's not at all like rhythmic dosing.
No.
It's just the way the application is. Like, for example, I have a patient right now, and she actually had a little spotting. I've had her on hormone static dosing for many years. She's having a little spotting. She hasn't had spotting before. So, mm-hmm, I'll be talking to her soon we're going to do a transvaginal ultrasound, because if you're spotting and you're in static dosing, we want to find out, is that lining thick? Are there any cysts? Are fibroids being activated? I've seen women with the estradiol patch, you know, their fibroids start to get activated again. So that's where I kind of, you know, the static dosing, like you said, you know, just give it to them, just leave it. But even at that point, you still have that management. Because I will say, I'm not perfect, and nobody is perfect. We might miss a day. And I have some women that miss many days, and then I'm like, this isn't healthy for you. So, you know, I do feel like there's that, you know, that partnership.
Well, I meant more about, you know, conventionally, they sort of, you know, other practitioners, you know, sort of set it and forget it. They're on the same dose for a very long time. There's no blood work done. It's been many months. That's what I mean. I don't think it should be done that way necessarily. I don't think you should set it and forget it. I think you should sort of pay attention to what's going on there, you know, because... you know, I know there's some discussion out there on the interwebs about, you know, transdermal creams, you know, even using Biest versus some of the FDA approved type options. And there, like you said earlier, when we first started talking, there's quite a big difference there. Mm-hmm. On the rhythmic dosing, you're still using a transdermal cream, but the doses are quite a bit higher. So again, it's confusing enough for practitioners to keep track of all that, right? I can see where, you know, where patients, they're not really sure what one is the best, but, how a woman feels on the particular treatment sort of dictates, mm-hmm. right? If you're feeling good, you know, and as long as you're safe, then, you know, keep going. But if you're not feeling as good as you want, there's still other options that can be explored that help a woman get a little closer to where she wants to be.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. Now we are planning on, we're actually in the process right now of creating a community, mm-hmm. called Progress Your Hormones, instead of Progress Your Health, it's called Progress Your Hormones, you know, a little play on words there, specifically around situations just like this, because these questions keep coming up over and over and over. We've gotten hundreds, if not thousands of them by now over the years, and we are finally at that point where, you know what, I think that creating a community around something like this, you know, just the questions we get in general, you know, giving women a resource and a place to, one, connect with themselves and connect with you and I, you know, I think would be you and I are at least excited about it anyways.
Oh, yeah. No, this has been a dream of ours for years. We've been talking about is creating some kind of online community where women can come, and it's all, you know, you can be anonymous or however you want to interact with each other. And you can ask your questions. We would do, you know, even like live webinars, Q&As, go over, you know, any kind of blood work or kind of explain all that so that we can learn about this. Because that's been a dream of ours for a long time. So right now, I don't know when this podcast will come out, but we're in the design and build phase of it. So it's in the works.
Yeah, summer 2025. So we're thinking, to be honest, we're probably thinking probably the beginning part of August.
Yeah.
Okay, I think this episode here, if this one's actually being published, this will probably be published towards the middle, toward the end of June 2025. Okay. Still a little bit of time away, but there is, down in the description below, there will be a link there for a... if you're interested in the community, all over the world, right? We've had people ask questions. This person was in Canada. We've had people ask us, you know, from Europe, Australia, other parts of the world. The community allows geography not to really dictate. So in the description below, there's a link there, which is a landing page for the community wait list. So if you're interested, click the link. It'll bring you to the landing page and enter in your name and email, and you'll be on the quote-unquote waiting list and get updates as we're making progress. And like I said, right now we don't have an exact date, but we're thinking the beginning part of August 2025. So like I said, we've been planning and thinking about this for a very long time. And I think right now is the, you know, for you and I think is the right time to actually, you know, create it, launch it, and women can connect all over the place. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anything else to add about Danielle's question?
I appreciate her. And like you said, she's a neighbor to the north from us. We're here in Western Washington. So love Vancouver.
Vancouver is just literally like, you know, we're like, if you look on a map, we're like a, you know, not even like a quarter inch from the Canadian border. We're
it's so 30
miles, mm-hmm. 30 minutes away from the Canadian border. So we consider, you know, someone from Vancouver almost like our neighbor. So I appreciate the question. ask any questions down below in the comments. Otherwise, visit our website, Ask the Doctor. And until next time, I'm Dr. Mackey.
And I'm Dr. Valerie.
Take care. Bye-bye.